It's about 10:33, so we're going to go ahead and get started because it looks like most everybody's here, and we know that we need to be done a little bit faster in this room so we can all get out so they can set up for lunch, and we really don't want to be in the way of anybody getting to lunch on time. So welcome to our session. We're going to start with just some quick introductions. My name is Ellen Vorenkamp, and I am an assessment consultant at Wayne Risa. So my job is to primarily go around our 33 districts and 100 some odd charter schools and do a lot of work around anything related to assessment. So I do a lot around balanced assessment systems, quality assessments, especially quality classroom assessments, a lot around formative assessment, and all of those types of things, and a little bit, a lot around data and helping schools use data in meaningful ways to really make some good decisions about where kids are at and where they need to go. I also sit on the board for the Michigan Assessment Consortium. I also am part of the FAME, Formative Assessment for Michigan Educators, and I'm also part of the executive committee that puts this conference together. So it's an honor to be here. I did not, however, come up with the name of this session, so we're not sure who did, and we think it's very ambitious, and we hope we live up to it. But so that's me. I'm going to let Joseph introduce himself.
To help us do a better job of communication across the organization and collaboration across the organization. And one of the reasons that that's necessary, we will talk about, particularly around vocabulary. Vocabulary is a critical issue here. And I also wanted to thank Kyle Ward, who agreed to handouts to whoever comes in. Thank you. That's me.
So we did change the PowerPoint a little bit this morning because Joseph and I are always looking to improve. So if you follow the bit.ly up here that's on the board, that will be the latest version of the PowerPoint. The one that's currently posted on the Michigan School Testing Conference website was from yesterday, and so we've made a couple of changes. And let you guys know, we are being beamed up to the UP, so everybody say hello to the people up in the UP. Hello. And we will be doing some activity here, and when we do that, we'll just ask the people up in the UP to do the same sort of conversations and have some of their own thinking. And if you're sitting at a desk by yourself up there, just have some conversation with yourselves, you know, and we'll come back and probably won't do a lot of debrief because you won't be able to hear the people in the audience. So we're going to start with just kind of a grounding activity to kind of just get us into thinking around our topic for today. So what we'd like you to do is pick your role. If you're a teacher, if you're a principal, or if you're a school leader, if you happen to be an administrator at the board level or superintendent, we wanted to have you have a quick conversation or just think in your own minds about how do you interact with assessment. So as a teacher, in thinking about how you interact with assessment, what are some of the things that you would do? And some of the ways that you use assessment in your classrooms. How often are you interacting with assessment in each of those different roles? What kinds of information do you need from those assessments in order to make sound decisions about where kids are at and where they need to go? And what are some of the issues or pitfalls that you come up against when you're looking at assessment information or assessment evidence and trying to make some of those decisions? So what we'd like you to do is pick a role. You don't have to do all three. And if you're an administrator, go ahead and put, you know, like at a district level, go ahead and put yourself in that position. And just take a minute and jot down some of your thinking around that. And then we'll give you a couple of minutes to share out at your tables. But let's take maybe 2-3 minutes and just have you jot down some responses to each one of those little bullets.
Oh yeah, please feel free to be noisy.
No chatting until after you do writing. This is a think question.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
All right, so now you've had a little bit of opportunity to write. Why don't you turn to a partner, maybe at your table, and learn from them in terms of what their role is and what they might be considering in terms of some of these questions from that particular role. We'll give you a couple minutes just to share at your tables.
Thank you for correcting my bad correction. I appreciate that.
So we're interested in hearing some of your responses. So how many teachers? How many took the teacher role? Do we have any teachers in the room? So if any of you might be willing to share, how often are you interacting with assessment? What are some of the information you need from your assessments? And what are some of the pitfalls that you might get from your assessment journey? Somebody would like to share? Thank you.
We collaborated together here on interacting with assessments. We said daily. You're always looking at your students, trying to gauge your lesson. Is it, you know, do you need to speed it up, slow it down, go over something? What kinds of information do we need? We need to know how well do they understand what you're doing, and do you need to, again, go over it, back up a little bit? Are they ready to move on? And our issues and pitfalls, we said, between the table here was absenteeism. Students, when they come into you that day, if they're ready to be assessed or if they're just not giving you quality information, and language barriers. So those were some of the things that we said, you know, assessment can be great, but there are all these issues sometimes get in the way of that.
Thank you. Anybody else in a teacher role that would like to share some thinking? You had your hand up. Is there anything you'd like to add? I saw it.
The school that I'm at is really different, though. I teach adjudicated youth. And so for us, I might have a student for one day. I might have a student for 3 years. And every student that walks through the door is different. I'm also, my background is special education. So for me, again, it's the daily, it's weekly. You know, every month we do STAR testing. We do pre-testing when kids come in. If we know when they're leaving, we do post-testing. But we also are looking for things like IEPs in that as well. And again, absenteeism for us is not an issue because our kids are locked up. And so they have the golden opportunity every day to get an education. But with that comes, do I have court tomorrow? Did my parents lose rights? Am I being charged? Did somebody hit me in the morning? It's sometimes testing is a great way to see the mood or where that student is that particular day. Again, kind of like our first speaker mentioned, it's great for that moment, that snapshot in time, but not always what the student truly knows.
So we're thinking about, from a teaching point of view, fairly often, right? Minute by minute, day by day in the classroom, making sure that we're recognizing we have different purposes for the evidence that we're collecting. And sometimes we need to either, you know, if we're going to certify whether or not they've got it, or sometimes we just need to continue the journey, right, and make sure that our lesson is working. So we need all kinds of information within a balanced assessment system, and we use that information differently. And some of the pitfalls are some things that are actually beyond our control, right, like the adjudicated youth, or the language barriers, and or the absenteeism. But however we can get through those pitfalls and we can make sure that we're using the best assessment at the right time to get the best information to figure out where kids are at and where they need to go next. So what about principals? Where are you guys? Do I have any principals in the room? I know I do. You can't hide. Come on. And you are, aren't you? All right, yeah, I thought so. And then back in the back and here. What are some of the answers that you guys wrote down or you had some conversation around?
I'm assistant principal at a high school in Detroit. So we do have a language barrier in Southwest Detroit. Everything's in English. Now we're having a lot of the Arabic kids come around. And so the test is only in English, and you don't have translators, you don't have the assistants. We also have, in the city, there's more, they added another assessment to the regular school calendar. So not only are we taking the SAT and all those other ones, they added their own, and then not, you know, kids get tired of testing all the time. And teachers get tired of stopping what they have to do to test or to accommodate the time for the testing. So I think time is getting to the point where there's not enough.
Yeah, so definitely time is a pitfall, right? And I think we need to be really careful and think about the way we use the term assessment. See, when I think of the term assessment, I think of it as an umbrella. And under that umbrella, there's a lot of different things that we do, and a test is a part of an assessment, right? A test is a type of assessment. Assessment is a much broader category. And I think we've gotten to the point where under our umbrella, that testing column or that testing, whatever they call those little brackets on the umbrella, has gotten so big that it's consumed everything that we're doing in our classrooms to a point where everything is about the test rather than some of the other assessments that we do along the way, like asking children a question or having conversations and doing an observation or listening to them when we're having, you know, those conferences or doing something that's formative in nature and giving the child feedback right in that manner. There's a lot of different ways that we can use assessment. It's not all about test, but I think you're feeling that our students are over-tested, but I would say they're also under-assessed in many ways. And that's because we're not being purposeful about our intention when we're looking at and using some of the data that we are collecting in a really appropriate way. So I think some of the pitfalls from a principal point of view, and those of you that are principals, correct me, is, well, first of all, what data should we be looking at to make really important decisions about kids at the big aggregate level? When I'm thinking about programs, when I think about curriculum, when I think about resources, what data should we use, right? And what assessments should we be using to get that data from? And of course, the pitfall is always time, right? Time and just all of these external pressures that are constantly hitting us. Any superintendents in the room or anybody at that level that would talk a little bit about the superintendents and what you need data for? Are there really no superintendents or nobody wants to admit to being one? Okay. All right, what about district level, higher level up in the buildings? You care to share anything that we may not have said already? Anything additional?
At the district level, my pitfalls are normally getting the information to our staff and having them understand what they need to do with it and having it done correctly. Sometimes they get stuff back and we're problem shooting. Like, we're trying to figure out what they've done, what they need to do, and just getting them all of the right information. That's really what mine is.
It's actually a beautiful segue into where we're going, right? Because when you do bring a whole bunch of people together from across the district and you're trying to make sense of the assessment data and have those conversations and make sure that it can impact something, it's very difficult when you're coming in with a whole bunch of different ideas about what assessment is, how to use that assessment data. It's almost like what Tom Guskey was talking about this morning when you have people raise their hands about what's the purpose of grades. Well, what's the purpose of assessment? And what's the purpose of this particular assessment? And how can we actually use that information? So yesterday we were doing a quick workshop and Jim Gullen was in there and he was talking a little bit about how when he worked at Oakland Schools, there was an initiative within the organization to bring people from all kinds of all of the different areas within the organization to have conversation around assessment. And so you had people from, you know, technology, you had people from the content areas, you had people from career tech, you had himself who was an assessment guru. You have all these people coming into this room and having these conversations. And they very quickly realized that they might be talking about formative assessment, but there were 33 different definitions of what formative assessment is, right? Or they might all be using one term, but nobody really had an understanding of what they were really talking about. So one of the first things that they had to do is, and really what we all need to do, is set the foundation and create some essential understandings. And among that first thing that Jim had to end up doing was start to build some assessment literacy and really start to talking to people about what is assessment and how do we use assessment and what are the different types of assessment. And it really came down to vocabulary and how we were using those different terms that we hear about when we think about assessment. What's criterion versus normed reference? What's summative versus, you know, formative? How do interim assessments fit into the picture? Once we have those conversations, then we can start thinking about how we start to use that data and if we're using that data in the most appropriate way. So we want to bring your attention to a couple of things. First of all, if you're interested in thinking more about assessment literacy and what that looks like, out there on the table where the Michigan Assessment Consortium is a brochure that looks like that, this, that has assessment literacy standards in it. And for each different level that you would see within an educational system, there are some important things that teachers, that administrators, that parents and students, that policymakers need to know and be able to understand about assessment and assessment literacy. And one of the best things about this, besides the standards, is in the back is a wonderful glossary. So we want you to be aware of this because you're really going to want to start with the vocabulary. And you're going to want to make sure that you have a shared understanding of the vocabulary that you're using when you're having discussions about assessment and the data that results from those assessments. You said you had a story. Did you want to share your story? Is this a good time?
So we're talking here about what assessment can and can't do. And a lot of the things that we talk about when we're in this space are about the things that are not appropriate uses of assessment. We see a lot of that, and a lot of it just is because of this issue, assessment literacy, different understanding of vocabulary, balance. But I want to talk about something where I had a teacher use assessment data in a way that totally changed my life, right? So from grade K to 4, I straight A's. Come to grade 5 and I'm failing. I don't know why I'm failing. I have no idea. I think I'm dumb. I go to grade 6 and it continues. I go through grade 7 and it continues. I get to grade 8 and I have a science teacher who pulls me aside and says, I've been looking at my grade book and you're acing all of your tests and you're doing really poorly on your homework. If you would take your homework and get it done, you'd do really well. And the funny thing is, I never understood that homework was supposed to go home. Because in grades K through 4, I could just do it in class. And no one ever told me that I needed to do that. And what happened was I went from a 1.2 GPA to a 3.8 GPA in one semester. Because I had a science teacher who took that data, pulled me aside and said what he saw in the data, shared that feedback with me, and really completely turned my life around. So.
Yeah. So it brings up an important point about assumptions and what assumptions we have about kids and what they understand about the assessments and the data that we're using and how we're using that data either for or against them, right? And so making sure that your students are assessment literate and have some of this shared understanding can be really powerful as well. So we wanted to start with just some of the foundational pieces, and I borrowed this slide from Andy Middlestead, who's sitting in the back, balanced assessment systems, and making sure that, because when we have further conversation today and we're going to have you do a quick activity, we want to make sure that we're all sort of on the same page. So when we think about a balanced assessment system, we think about making sure that we have our summative assessments in place, that we have our interim assessments there, and that we have our formative assessment practices. And that all three of them are sharing equal weight within our classrooms and within our districts so that we don't have an umbrella that's lopsided and all about just the test, which usually ends up being the high-stake tests, which research show is not quite what we need in order for students to be successful, right? If we really want to impact student achievement, we really need to get more to the formative pieces. And yet, if you're thinking about the little things, little brackets on the umbrella, that's a very, very thin little one that breaks pretty often, right? Whereas the testing one seems to be a little bit bigger. And while it's all good, we just need to make sure that, and all of this information is coming together, we need to make sure we're using all of it in a meaningful way. So when we think about assessment of and assessment for, of course we think of summative and formative. Assessment for learning is what occurs during the learning, when the learning is underway, so that instruction can be adjusted. And this is what a lot of teachers and students should use. We should use the formative assessment all along the way to figure out where our kids are at, where they need to go, and how we're going to help them close the gap. And listening to Tom Gusky again this morning talking about should we grade them or should we not, well, when you look at the research that talks about how when you put a grade on something that the kids are still learning, they tend to quit learning it because they think that they've already been judged, right? And so that's an inappropriate use of assessment data when we're using something that's formative to put a grade on it. So how long do we wait until we actually put the grade? When we think that they've actually got it, right? And when we need to certify it. So having a clear understanding of what assessment for learning is and how that impacts and how we use that data can be really powerful. Assessment of learning, on the other hand, is more about certification. It's more about the end result. And every point, and we always come to a point at the end of the semester or at the end of the year or whenever, that we need to know if the kids have got enough information. And at that point, we can do something summative to actually certify or judge. So the way we like to think about it is assessment of learning is summative, and it is about judging kids. Assessment for learning is formative, and it's about nudging kids, right? And so having a clear understanding of your purpose of every assessment that you give to your students is huge. Because when you have a clear purpose, then you are much more likely to make sure that you are going to be using the assessment data in an appropriate way. Here's just another visual that you may have seen that talks about the different types and some names that you might understand. So when we talk about a summative assessment of learning at the higher stakes, you know, we're talking, of course, like the MSTEP, your MyAccess, your WIDA, any kind of in-course exams, your SAT, your PSATs. Benchmark assessments or interim might be more short cycle, but they do tend to be more summative in nature. And then you have your classroom formative practices, where you're continually gathering evidence, analyzing the evidence, and doing something with that evidence in terms of feedback to either move the kids forward or to put them into the new a new direction. So turn to a partner real quick and just kind of solidify your thinking around this whole balanced assessment system piece before we move on to a couple more charts talking about the use and uses of these particular types of assessment. I'll give you maybe 2 minutes.
I missed it before I came off the side.
Yes.
MSTC
Gold. Gold, yeah.
Alrighty, thank you. Please pause. So this slide, and if you're following along in the Bitly, this slide just provides a little bit more clarification of the two different types of assessment when we think about a balanced assessment system, the summative and the formative. Kind of gives you some of the reasons, the audience, the focus, and the place and time. I think one thing I would add to this column here, the assessment for learning is the students, definitely, but I would also add teachers, right? Because I think teachers, and I think in some ways parents, can use that information a lot. I know that when I was teaching, I would often have parents ask me how they could help their students, right? And the information that I gave them on how I thought they could help their students was based on what I was doing in my classroom much more often than it was based on a MEEP score or an MSTEP score or an SAT score. Right, so I think parents can also use that information on that daily basis to figure out where their kids are at. When we think about the primary users and the uses, this is where we start to find some overlap and where we start to find some practices where people are using some assessment data inappropriately, and in doing some might actually be harming kids along in that process. And so we want to make sure that we have some conversation around that. The assessment of learning is typically used by policymakers, program planners, program supervisors, and teachers. And we would hope that the decisions that you make and some of the things that you use this information for are at a much higher level than trying to take a one day in the life of score and make really important decisions about kids. Now, you take that one score and you put it with multiple measures, like some of the things that you're doing in your classroom and some of the homegrown assessments that you might have to get a much more detailed picture, then you can start to make some decisions about kids. But just using one score in the day in the life of, when we know that sometimes our students' days in the life of can be quite chaotic, we need to be careful with that. And I only say that because I have seen that and may have actually participated in some of that when I was actually in the classroom. I vividly remember taking MSTEP scores and thinking about which kids were going to be in summer school and stuff like that. I was at a district recently, which shall remain nameless, that was actually, we were doing some data disaggregation around NWEA MAP scores, and I went over to this one table, and these teachers were there, and they had this list, and I was just kind of watching them, and they were having conversation, and they were pulling up the scores on the computer, and then they were scratching names off of this list, and I thought, well, this is intriguing. What's going on? So I walk over, and what are y'all doing? Oh, well, this is our gifted and talented kids, and there's too many kids in this class, and we can't keep them all in this class anymore, so we're using the RIT scores to figure out who can't be in the gifted and talented class, and I was just kind of aghast. I was just like, are we using anything else? Are we thinking about, you know, how they're performing or how they're actually doing or what their motivation is, you know, those kinds of things? And they didn't. I know. I told them, Nick would be really upset with you for doing that. And nobody, there has never been a session I know that NWA has ever done that said, this is the way we use this data. Yeah, and it's kind of scary, right? Yeah. So making sure that we're using it appropriately, because I thought in that instance some kids were being harmed in the process. They were being excluded based on one day in the life of. And we had a conversation and the teachers stopped and we had, you know, thinking around that. But when you think about assessment four, of course it's for the teachers, the students, the parents. It helps improve their learning, right? It helps teachers diagnose and respond, give the kids that feedback so that when they go to take their summative assessments, either in their classrooms and or, you know, at the end of the year with the MSTEP, they can be more successful because we know where their gaps are and we've closed them. We know what their misconceptions are and we've helped them get through those so that they can be more successful. And just one more little slide here about the student's role. And I think it's really important that when we think about assessment in the umbrella term, that we really think about the impact all of this is having on students and how all of this can help them, right? Because that's what we're in the business of, right? And when you think about the definition of assessment, it's using this information to make educational decisions about student learning and where they need to go to next. And we can do that at different levels, but we need to make sure, again, that we have that clear purpose behind us. So that brings us to this handout that has a little bit about some of these purposes that we have found to be most prevalent in schools when we've done some work. And I'm going to let Joseph take over.
Okay, it's working. So this is something that four organizations actually worked together to do. It was the Michigan Assessment Consortium and Wayne Risa and Oakland Schools and the Center for Assessment where I worked. And what we were trying to do is we were trying to help districts have a principled conversation around developing a district assessment system. And our experience in that area, that the difficulties that we were seeing in that area were a lot of fractured vocabulary and power imbalances up and down the hierarchy in the educational system. And one of the things that can be difficult is if you are in a position of authority with no malice, you can think about the uses you need to fulfill, the purposes that you need to fulfill for your role, and think primarily that if it's good for me, it's good for the people who report to me. It's really easy to think that, but it's not the case. As you heard in the conversation, we have really different needs, really different data needs, information needs. We are going to put the data to very different kinds of purpose, to different kinds of uses. And so one of the first things that we struggled with was kind of developing something along the lines of a catalog of different purposes and uses that gather, you know, kind of pull together the majority of uses that we've seen of assessment in the educational system. And we also learned that, one, as you can see on this table, there's a category and these different uses fall into. And then, you know, one of the things that I've really found to be a difficult part of the conversation is what's the difference between a purpose and a use? because we talk about that a lot in validity, and so we struggled with that idea. And ultimately came to the conclusion that in order to really communicate why we're doing an assessment, we need to know the purpose. You know, what was this assessment built to do? And then we need to know how the results are going to be used. You have to put those things together to really understand what we're doing. And that was a real aha moment for me. Right? A real aha moment for me. Because I've been struggling with this a lot. Because you can talk about purposes, and you can talk about uses. You can get them all very confused. So we developed this. And I'm not going to say that this is the be-all, end-all. Right? The idea that we're going to come up with a consistent and coherent set of vocabulary, I had my boss at the Center for Assessment make a quite legitimate critique. If you're trying to cure a fractured vocabulary in the assessment world, you're asking us to turn the Titanic 2 feet before we hit. Right? It's tilting at windmills. And so the idea is, I really don't think we're going to get there. But when we're having conversations in our communities, we can settle on a common set of vocabulary. Right, so this is what we tried to do. And the two that are up at the top in red, these are, in a lot of ways, implicit purposes and uses. This is behind every kind of assessment that we do. You know, we're maintaining a feedback loop between a teacher and student so that we can monitor learning and to guide next steps. And we also, whenever we give an assessment, we are indicating the knowledge, skills, and abilities that we value. And those things are so implicit that it can be easy to forget that this is why we're doing it. And, or at least it should be why we're doing it. Right, so this is what we came up with. And so because we don't have a lot of time, we're not going to spend a lot of time specifically on this
chart. We give him a moment just to look it over and maybe have some conversation?
Yes.
And maybe as you're looking at it, kind of like Guski did this morning, which ones do you think are most important? And then have a conversation at your table and find out what they think is most important. And you're going to recognize, like Joseph was saying, different people in different roles have different needs. And we need to make sure that we're honoring all of them, but that we're all using them correctly, right? And that we're not trying to have one test fit everything or one assessment fit all. So we'll give you just a couple minutes to look it over. And if you can think of anything that we left off, we'd be more than happy to add it, because we're always looking to improve and make sure that we're getting the whole catalog. So we'll give you maybe about 2 minutes just to look it over.
Oh, absolutely. No, I was kidding. Let's pull everyone back together. I know that the conversations are really interesting, but we're going to ask you to go back to those conversations in a bit. So, wanted to get just a little bit of feedback from two or three people in the room. You know, what were you hearing at your table conversation about kind of coming up with this kind of vocabulary? Do you think it would help? You know, would this facilitate those difficult conversations?
Anybody care to share?
Right, and this was one of the conversations we had, and I want to recap what was said. One of the things that jumped out to me as well when we were developing this is how many of these say evaluate achievement. Right? That's assessment of learning; it's not assessment for learning. Right, and how many of these are about assessment for learning? Yep, you've got kind of that first one, and then inform instruction, right? And the idea was this can be kind of depressing because these, I think we all recognize that these tests have been used this way, and it is seriously unbalanced.
Well, we have a couple of school improvement people at this table in particular, and so we talked about how with the new MyKIP model, which is going to put more of an emphasis on monitoring and evaluating, understanding the whole assessment for learning is really going to come into that process as we're monitoring as we go along and evaluating as we go along. So it's going to be critical to understand this nomenclature in order to be able to help people to understand MyKIP.
Thank you. So one of the things that, you know, the idea of does this help us understand, you know, solidify or settle on a set of vocabulary, that still is a really difficult issue. And when we released the toolkit that we used with the district, we released it as an alpha. We didn't even release it as a beta, because we knew it was really a work in progress. But one of the things that this was used for was to talk about, oh my goodness, I can now see how much we are doing on one side, and let's start talking about what we can do to help individual students. So that is a really different set of conversations. So
I'm going to just jump in here real quick. So what Joseph keeps referring to is called the Data Assessment Inventory. It's called DASCD, and actually it's a tool that Joseph created, and it's marvelous. And what you do is you actually create a committee within your district, and you start to think about, and you create a district inventory, right, of all the assessments that are given throughout your district. And then you have to identify what's their purpose. That in and of itself was one of the most difficult things that I've helped two districts now go through. They have all of these assessments, and yet they couldn't identify why they were giving all of these assessments, right? They knew they were giving the SAT because the state says, you know, that kind of a thing, but they really had no idea why they were giving all of these academic evaluation, you know, of achievement, and what they found is there was so much redundancy, and over-tested, right, under-assessed. And then they really started to realize that formative assessment was nowhere on the map, and that's really an area that a lot of people actually came to the conclusion that, and in fact, of the four districts that did this, I think it was West Bloomfield, Novi, Dearborn, and Wayne Westland. Dearborn and Wayne Westland, I know, because they're in Wayne County, formative assessment training, and trying to make sure that they're creating that balance. And clarity. Purposeful clarity in terms of, okay, why are we giving this test? You know, we're giving these end-of-course exams, or we're giving these unit exams. Are they for this purpose, and are we using them for this purpose, or are we using them for whatever? And it went back to grades. Why am I giving this grade? You know, Jim was talking about how we have some students sitting in our classrooms that never do homework, but pass every test, kind of like Joseph, and yet we fail them because they're not doing their homework. Well, why are we giving them those zeros on the homework? Is it really about achievement, or is it really more about compliance and classroom management, right? And so how are we using this assessment data that we're collecting and making sure that, again, we're not harming kids and that we're using it in the proper way? A lot came out of these, and if you want any more information around that, I'd be happy to talk to you about it, and so would Joseph, because it's a pretty meaningful experience that districts can go through.
Thank you. And one of the primary activities that people went through was looking at the ones they wanted to use, eliminating a lot of these uses because, you know, we want to make sure we're focusing on the ones that are the most important or that we are legally required to do, right? So that we can really, instead of having the scattershot approach around assessment, we can have a really focused approach around assessment. And one of my favorite statements by Ted Coladarchi, revered educator in Maine and academic from Maine, said, a set of assessments no more constitutes a system than a pile of bricks constitutes a house. And we often are working within a pile of bricks. And it's not because we're not good-hearted people, not because we are in this profession for the wrong reason. It's because we all have different needs and we all are trying to meet those needs individually. So we put into the system something that is going to meet our needs without necessarily thinking about how it's going to work with everyone else's needs. So I think in a couple of our a couple of the districts that we work with, we went from, you know, over 20 purposes down to 13, very, very carefully selecting what was to be done with assessment in the district. So, okay, with all that, let's go back to the very beginning. And so, as it says there, I mean like really, really far back. Right? So the idea is we need to work backward from what we ultimately want to achieve. Right? And who here has heard of a theory of action? A few people. So, thank you. So, this is something that we need to learn how to do for our assessments. The idea is, we have a current state, we want to get to a desired state, and if we administer assessment, that's going to make it happen. So, of course, that isn't helpful. But, it is common. So, let's think about the theory of action that's implicit in No Child Left Behind. Right? So we have identified poor proficiency rates, particularly for disadvantaged students. And we're going to test them every year. We're going to then, because of that, get to 100% proficiency by 2014, 9 years later. Right? And the real theory of action underlying that is really simple. If we shine a light on the issues, offer choice, transportation, and tutoring, then educators will work harder and smarter to avoid such consequences. And that is kind of an insulting theory of action, right? It's not that we aren't doing what we need to do. So this is something that I see all the time. Why are we giving the test? Who's going to use it? How are they going to use it? How are we going to help them with supports to understand how to use it? So that we can get to what our goal is. So, I like to think of a theory of action as a delectable education policy sandwich, right? That it's all, those are always delectable, by the way. And the reason I say that is, it's almost ridiculous to say that, right? But in my experience, you kind of have to think of it this way. I am doing something that is so delicious or so compelling to me that I can sell it to the powers that be. So let's talk about the current state. You know, is it a baguette or gluten-free bagel? And on the desired state, you know, it's some kind of focaccia or pita. And in between are all the fixins. So the key questions here are, what key roles are involved in taking us from the current state to the desired state? What actions need to be carried out and by whom? What indicators of progress in this theory of action should immediately be evident? So for example, if I am in one of those four districts that have all kind of put more of a focus on formative assessment, what are the indicators of progress that should be immediately evident? Well, I can think of a few, just to give an example. I need to see the school board and the district superintendent and the central office being willing to put resources forward for formative assessment training and coaching. And not just that they need to put those things forward, but they need to understand why they need to do that. So, and then if you look at the school level, got to figure out a way to have teachers be able to collaborate around student work to understand what formative assessment is in their classroom. And principals need to support that. Right? So those are some of the things that immediately evident. You need to, that's the first step. You're not going to get to more formative assessment happening in the class. That's more an indicator of progress evident in the midterm. So, and then, again, you think about the conditions that encourage people in those roles to take the necessary action. Often that's assessment literacy. And what are the supports or resources and tools to help those people take those actions in a sound manner? So that's, there's a lot of literature around theory of action, but this kind of boils it down to its essential elements. And it, you know, kind of taking from the last slide of this morning's presentation. Yeah, let's not get to perfection. Let's take the first step. And this is one way you can kind of take a first step. So, where does it fit? Oh, actually, there we go. So key questions again, what types of assessment data are needed by people in each role to carry out this theory of action? And to what degree do different types of data need to be available to people? And how can people at different levels in the organizational hierarchy successfully negotiate with each other? And this is where assessment literacy is so critical. You have to have an understanding up and down the organization that we have to allow people to meet their own needs with what kind of assessment they need. And sometimes it might mean I have to give something up that is not quite as important because I need to be able to devote the time to something maybe in the classroom. So this then gets the idea of matching the characteristics of assessment to specific educational needs. And so we've developed a set of questions that are very similar to what you already talked about, but these kind of sharpen them a little. So one of the primary questions is, how often does a person in this role need assessment data to adequately perform their job so we can get to that desired state? We can talk about how fine or coarse-grained the assessment is in terms of the kind of information and data that come back to the educator. So for example, we heard daily, moment to moment in the classroom, we heard kind of intermittently at the school level, at the district level, and maybe even annually for large programming decisions at the district level. So you have very different grain sizes that are necessary there. And then you have two really important questions. What degree of control over this assessment does the person need? What degree of control over timing does this person need? And what type of assessment? And primarily it's of and for, the difference between of and for learning, and then within for learning, interim summative, and then kind of just like at the end summative. So one of the key pieces that is really difficult to get done in a district is to shift resources from one area to another. But if we're going to make a difference with our assessment to get to our end goal, we have to provide people with the tools. They have to have the assessment literacy, the understanding of appropriate uses, matching of types of characteristics to the assessments, and then, you know, communities of practice and ongoing professional learning. These we have found are necessary. So, you've got your handout. Now what we're going to ask you to do, so you looked at this chart, you had some conversations about different types and purposes. What we would like you to do is at this point to think about one of those purposes on that chart and think about how can I use the data and match the appropriate type of assessment to the data that I need in my role to make a difference for kids in my district, my school, my class. So what we're going to ask you to do is to go ahead and practice developing a pretty simple theory of action. So let's just skip this one and have you work on your own. We made a change at the beginning because we're trying to be formative. So let's go ahead. You know, wanted to make this a little more useful specifically to yourselves. But I think what we want to do, as I recall why we had this in here, we wanted to just do a real quick practice as a group before we move on. So let's think about what key roles are involved in taking action for Sharif to improve his students' achievement on his end of course mathematics assessment, by more quickly identifying students falling behind and addressing their needs as soon as possible. So this is a really simple use case. Right. So what key roles are involved in taking that action? So So we have, someone said teachers, someone said students. Sure. So, is there anyone else involved in this? Yes. Right, so the comment for those in the UP, formative assessment is involved in this one, so you might have to get some PD if the teacher is not yet does not yet have the assessment literacy around formative assessment or a lot of practice around it. Right, so you might need to get someone from the district involved. You might need to get someone a school leader involved to be able to get Sharif the kinds of professional learning he might need. So good. So what assessment characteristics match? Right? So let's think about what type of assessment, right? You said formative. So that is assessment for learning. How often is this taking place if he wants to catch students who are falling behind before it becomes a real issue for the student? Someone said daily. All right. Who needs to control that part of the assessment system? Teacher. Does the building principal have any need to control the content of that part of the assessment system? Yeah, so the response was, well, if other people are teaching the same course and we're seeing this as a school-wide phenomenon, we may need to have the school principal involved in this to some degree, but how much is the school principal going to control her teacher's content on the test? Right? But so it's a good point. You may need that kind of support, but control over the content kind of makes no sense for someone higher than the classroom to be dictating this is what you're going to do with your formative assessment. How about the timing of the formative assessment? Who controls that? Teacher. So again, it's pretty simple there. And then what are we expecting the teacher to do with the results of that part of the assessment system? Adjust instruction to match what the student needs. So what actions need to be carried out? I need to do the formative assessment practices, the process. I need to know how to gather the data. I need to know how to interpret the data. And I need to adjust assessment for student needs. Feedback. So we already talked about assessment characteristics matching, which we already did. And what indicators of progress should be immediately evident for the student or for this teacher? How do we know that this theory of action has just begun? Yeah. So we're not going to see necessarily a lot of this kind of thing in the classroom immediately. We have to recognize that sometimes these kinds of implementations take time. Right? Yeah, so it's about what can we expect is going to happen as soon as the teacher embarks on this journey, right? So maybe it is a first attempt at formative assessment. So I'll tell a little story. My son is in a science class, or was last year in a science class, and I found out about halfway through the course that he was doing no homework on. So me all over again, right? And so I kind of asked him what was going on. I said, why aren't you doing your homework? He said, well, the teacher isn't grading our homework, and so I don't see any reason to do it. That's not going to be in my grade. And so the idea was, I give an assignment, you take it home that night, you bring it forward the next day, and the day after that, I'm going to think about what I taught 2 days ago. Right? That's a first step toward formative assessment, right? It's not necessarily that moment-to-moment immediately adjusting instruction, but one of the problems was the students didn't know why it was happening. The students didn't see a purpose in it. And so I did bring this to the attention of his teacher, and she said, oh, okay. Well, I can tell everyone why we're doing this. But it was, you know, it was one of those things you can see. This was a first attempt at moving into the formative assessment space, and it was successful. Right? It was better than what was happening before. So, what conditions? We've already talked about a lot of the conditions. Encourage being able to take the action. So we've talked about support from the principal, potentially. And if there is no support at the local level, it might just be a determination on the teacher's part. And then, what supports? What supports, resources, and tools help those people to take the actions in a sound manner? So one of the things that we've actually found at the state, particularly when I was working there, we tried a train-the-trainer model with FAME, with the Formative Assessment for Michigan Educators, and it did not work. We had to have coaches. We had to have coaches who were dedicated to spending at least a considerable part of their time going into the classrooms and observing and discussing what they saw afterward with no threat of evaluation around this. It was to help them improve their practice. So they had to have the support to make it work well. And it couldn't just be a train the trainer, sit and get, now you go out and do formative assessment. All right. So, small groups, how much time do we have left? 10 minutes. So, my goodness, this is taking longer than I was intending. Identify a current state, identify a desired end state that doesn't require too many actors. Let's just do something simple, something pretty simple. Develop a theory of action using an outline, kind of described above, and we'll wander between groups if you would like help. We're over? They told us 11:50, right? Well, you have homework. Yes. Thank you, everyone, and sorry we went over.